I'm going to do my best not to absolutely bore you like with missionary slides and things like that. But some of you who weren't here this weekend probably don't even know that this is like a focus on missions this weekend, okay? And normally what you get is slides from the field, you know, people from Africa and other places like that, you know, dancing and things like that. No dancing. What I do want to tell you about, though, because Steve and Karen, who are the two principal players here in this missions effort, as I understand it, have asked me to talk to you about what I do, because I'm a sort of a missionary, okay? And I want to tell you what I do, why I do it, and then what I do, and then we'll move into how it's done, and you can just stop me anytime you want to. How long do we go? Till 10. Wow. Wow. Okay. Okay, good. All right, so the name of the ministry that I am the front doormat to, that's how we spell leader, is we spell leader D-O-O-R-M-A-T, okay? And that is our slogan is, if they're not wiping their feet on you, you're not leading them. Okay? Got that one, Steve? Okay. The name of the ministry is Third Millennium Ministries. And a lot of people don't realize this, but in the year 2001, we entered into the third Christian millennium. That is the third set of 1,000 years after Jesus was here with us, okay? Or was born, anyway. And so we knew we needed to have a long period of time to finish this project, so we thought maybe we could get it done in 1,000 years. So we didn't say 21st century. We said third millennium. Okay, that's the idea. Now, 20th century Fox made a big mistake. Do you know this? The 21st? Okay, the 21st century came, and someone had actually had bought the name and bought, okay, and trademarked it and everything, and they had to pay a lot of money to get out of it. Okay, it was really funny to get the name for the 21st century. So when you notice that, you'll see why they did all that. But at any rate, it's really interesting. What we do at Third Millennium is we try to meet what, in my opinion, is the greatest need that the Christian church has today. And there are lots of needs, and they're huge, almost all of them, and there are lots of legitimate and good and wonderful God-pleasing mission efforts in the world. This is not the only one, but in terms of my own personal calling in life and that kind of thing, I really do consider this a crucial dimension of the body of Christ at this stage in its history. Well, what is that? It is making sure, as best we can, that the leaders of the church everywhere in the world understand the Bible and sound theology. How's that? Because you can't have anything go well if the leaders are not doing well. Now, let me just tell you how we got started. We got started because for a number of years while I was teaching in seminary, I would travel around a lot teaching in different places, and I became aware during those years of how little opportunity there is for people to learn the Bible when they're pastors and other kinds of church leaders. In fact, I discovered, just by accident, in fact, that where the church is growing the fastest in the world, there is the least opportunity for pastors to learn the Bible. Kind of backwards, you know. Here in the United States, where the church doesn't grow very well, we got tons and tons and tons of schools of every variety and every type you can possibly imagine available to the people who are here, at least the English speakers. But in reality, the fact is that where there are Christian churches that are growing really fast, and those would be places like Africa and China, India, places like that, there is the very little opportunity for church leaders to study the Bible. Well, that became plain to me as I would travel around and teach. But I had a friend in Jackson, Mississippi, who was a student in Jackson, Mississippi. In fact, my family and that family are very close to each other. I've married them, I've buried them, and I've baptized them. And you know, this particular student was the woman of the family, and she was a matriarch of a plantation in Mississippi. One of these, if you saw their house at the time, it looked like Tara and Gone with the Wind, okay? And that's what it looked like, okay? So you kind of have the idea of what kind of people I'm talking about here, okay? Well, she was a student at the seminary, and she was sitting in the library one day, and an African student walked up and said, "Can I see that magazine?" And it was a Time magazine. And so she handed it to him without looking at it. And he looked at it, and she said his eyes got really big. And he looked at the front cover, and he said, "I think that's my son." And she took it from him, and it was a pile of teenage African bodies in a ditch, just a pile of them. And he was afraid that was his son there. And they called the Red Cross, and a couple of days later, they found out it was his son. Okay, at that point, the way she tells the story anyway, she said to herself, no more of this. No more of bringing international students to the United States to go to seminary. To begin with, 92% of them don't go back home for more than 5 years. Okay, that means you have to have 11 come to get one to go back. You with me on that? And besides, when they come, they usually don't know English very well, so they only get about a third of what you're saying in class. They don't have very good notes. And they're separated from their families, and they're separated from their churches. And if they happen to get their kids, then they really don't go back. But if they do go back, then their kids are so out of sort with their home culture that they just don't make it. And so it's a nightmare bringing them here. You probably have heard of people that have been brought to seminary. You may even support somebody that's done that. You would think, for example, an Ethiopian student would have to go back to Ethiopia. Surely there are no churches that would want an Ethiopian student here in the United States, right? No, there are Ethiopian, Protestant Ethiopian churches around the United States here and there, and they need pastors too. And would you go back to Ethiopia with your children if you could stay here? Of course not. So you can't blame them, okay? But the fact is that what we end up doing then is out of convenience for us, and this is all very convenient for us because it doesn't bother us to give them a little money to get them over here, we're actually robbing the church of the gifts of the Holy Spirit that they need over there. With me on this? So she said, no more of this. And she decided that what we needed to do was we needed to figure out a way to put seminary in a box and send it to the world. And so she called me up one day. I remember the day. And she said, "Richard, this is what I need. This is what I want to do, make a seminary in a box." She said, "If I get the money, can you get the box?" And I said, "I can get the box. That's the easy part." It's not. I thought it was. I said, "If you can get the money, I can get the box." Okay? And that's what Third Millennium is. It's seminary for the world. Our slogan is biblical education, and by that we mean like you would get in a seminary in this country, biblical education for church leaders. Biblical education for the world. That's the second tagline. First tagline is biblical education. Second tagline is for the world. And we, believe it or not, we actually mean that. We mean every single church leader, every land, every language. That's our target. Biblical education for the world. And then the last tagline is for free. So that's what Third Mill is. Now, it might surprise you to know just how great this need is, so I want to show you a chart here that's a summary of a section of the Atlas of Global Christianity written in 2010, which is more or less the gold standard for evangelicals as missionary agencies and those kinds of things try to strategize about the future. This is the most reliable and most people's viewpoint, estimation of what the Holy Spirit's going to do in the next 30 years or so, okay? Are you with me on this? Now, this is to say, in other words, if Holy Spirit continues to do what He has been doing for the last 25 years, in the next 25 years or 30 years, then this is going to be the result. Now, obviously, if we have World War III, it's going to change things. So, yeah, I got that, okay? If Putin has his way and we have a World War III, then things are going to change. I can tell you this. I was in Manhattan about 10 days after 9/11, and even the cabbies were nice. Okay? I mean, everybody was going to church for about a week in Manhattan. Are you following me? Now that you go there now, it's like it was in the old days. Okay? So if we have a world war, religion is going to become very important to people all of a sudden. So it's going to change the texture here, the landscape. A huge global economic crisis, I mean a real one, not like what we are having these days, that's going to change it. A pandemic would change it. Major pandemic would bring revival in lots of parts of the world that are not registered here. But if things go as they have been going, here are the results. Look at North America. We are going to grow numerically as Christians, and this means anybody that would check the box, I'm a Christian. Doesn't matter what brand they are, okay? But we would grow numerically, but in terms of the general population growth, comparison to the general population, will actually decline by 7% by 2050. Do you see this number right here? That's compared to the general population growth of the United States. Decline of 7%. Oceania, we don't really care about them. We don't know where they are, do we? Whatever. They're negative 5% too. That's the South Pacific Islands, New Zealand, those kinds of places, okay? Australia is included in that too, but we don't care about them at all. Europe, both East and West, will also have a 3.4% decline given the general to the general population. It would be worse than that if it were not for the immigration from Africa. African immigrants, by and large, are Christian. And in fact, if you go to London today, the largest and fastest growing churches in London are Nigerian. And they're reaching the white population, which is a great thing. Okay, because they're closing Anglican churches as fast as they possibly can close them up, selling them off as restaurants and condos and mosques. How about that? When the bishops need money, they just sell one of their empty buildings, and that's what they do. Okay, so negative 3%. By the way, this number would be greater if it weren't for the Latinos and the Asians. The immigrants is what keeps this number from being higher than it is. How about that? So be glad that you for the Latin invasion. And I hope you did see the Time magazine that had as its cover article the Latino Reformation. Did you see that? Okay, you need to go to the library and look that up. It's fascinating. South America, negative 2.3. Asia, a plus. This is the first plus. 2.7%. Now, the experts, the so-called experts in all this, say now that China has flatlined. It's reached its zenith. It's starting to trail off a little bit. India is still on the upswing. India. Our token Indians here. Your nation is still on the upswing for Christianity, okay? Still moving up. And it's a rapid growth there, and at plus 2.7%. But this is the amazing thing right here. Already today, there are estimates of a half billion professing Christians in Africa. A half billion, 500 million of them, okay? And if things continue in Africa as they have been, then by 2050, there will be another half billion new Christians in Africa. In other words, 1 billion Christians in Africa. Now, what's the population of the United States? 330 to 50 million. You with me on this? You understand what I'm saying to you now? I'm telling you there are going to be three times as many professing Christians in Africa as there are people in the United States today. Yes or no? You got that? Now, if we have a billion Christians to serve with church leaders, and we need to have maybe one pastor for every 100 of them, how many pastors do we have to train between now and 2050? A lot. Who can do the math? 100-person congregation, that's a rather large average. 10 million of them. Are you with me on this? 10 what? Million. Now, I hate to tell you this, but that's not going to be done with traditional Bible schools. It's wonderful that we have lots of Bible schools in Africa and that more are being made, and they will have average of 20, 30, sometimes as many as 100 students in them, but that's never going to reach the goal. This is just digging the hole deeper, and we're sinking further and further into the quicksand when that's our strategy for training church leaders. Now, at Third Mill, we have this strange belief. And it comes from our tradition. Our tradition, the Westminster Confession of Faith, say, yeah, I know what that is. Okay, good. It only talks about human rights one time. Does anybody know when it talks about human rights? It's well hidden. It's the right of every Christian to have the Bible in his own language. Isn't that something? Now, that's something that our tradition believed in those days. We were very keen on that, and that's a wonderful thing because that was the great challenge in those days. It was to get the Bible into the languages of the world. Well, that's almost been done, okay, especially by Wycliffe. I mean, it has almost happened. I mean, we're so close that Wycliffe is now looking for a new reason to exist, okay? We're going to be their reason, by the way, because what Third Mill believes is this, that not only does every Christian in the world have a right to the Bible in his own language, every Christian in the world has a right to a well-taught pastor, period. I know I can't say that anymore because of what our president did with it. For real, okay? Without exception. Every Christian in the world has a right to a well-taught pastor. But here's the reality of it. The vast majority of Christians in the world today, I'm talking upwards of 85% and above, the vast majority of Christians in the world today, much less by 2050, have pastors or church leaders who have had less than 1 hour of training in the Bible. Now, you know how much your pastors mess you up with all the education they have, right? Say yes. Okay. Have you ever known a pastor that doesn't just royally mess things up? No. Okay. And they've been trained and taught and they learn and they read and have all these wonderful resources available to them. Can you imagine what Steve would do to you if he had had less than 1 hour of training in the Bible? I mean, good grief, it's enough to make you a Catholic, isn't it? And give me a Pope. Give me a Pope, please. Help me, somebody. Help me, Jesus. Because it's a nightmare. And that's the nightmare that most of your brothers and sisters in the world today face. And it's not like here, where if Steve messes up, what will you do? You'll either get rid of him or you'll go to another church, right? That's not the way it is for most of your brothers and sisters in the world. They are stuck with the man that they have because they're the only show in town. Are you following me? Now, why are they that way? Why do they face that challenge? There's really only one answer. I mean, it's a simple answer. The reason that the vast majority of the world does not have well-taught pastors is because we are hoarding the education that church leaders need here. We hoard it in the United States of America. Used to say that about Western Europe, but you really can't say that about them. They're so far down the hole. But we're hoarding it here. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean by that is, as evangelicalism shrinks in the United States over the last, since World War II, we have been making more and more seminaries. It's just amazing how true that is. And we've been making those seminaries nicer and nicer and nicer. Steve went to Reformed Seminary in Orlando, Florida, which is a $23 million or so dollar campus, which is very interesting, okay? But when RTS started, it was started in a house. Well, that was when men were real men, okay? And the professors gave up their jobs and worked for practically nothing, and the students, you know, went there and had no promise of a job or anything like that. But what you do in a seminary in the United States is you don't keep it mean and lean, you make it nicer and nicer. Nice padded chairs like you have in here, air conditioner working. You know, we're not about to say to everybody, in fact, you can't even open the windows in the seminary. Okay, so we're not about to say, let's save some dollars and send them to Asia by opening the windows and not running the air conditioner today. How about that, guys? No way, we're not going to do that. We quit. You're not taking care of us. We deserve better. There you go. The average seminary in this country, for less than 75 students graduating each year, the average annual operating budget is $15 million a year. To graduate. Want it worse than that? Want a sad story? There was just a recent study done by the Lilly Foundation on our seminaries. One-third of that 75 never goes into the ministry. A second third are out of the ministry within 8 years. Of the last third, half of them are self-reporting that they're failures. So for $15 million, you're getting 12 and a half people. And you didn't even know it, did you? I mean, what else are we going to do? Got to have them. Well, when you're spending that kind of money in the United States on developing church leaders and our branch of the church, because we are not growing numerically, our leaders can't even find places to work, okay? It's really an amazing thing. While that's happening here, meanwhile, the vast majority of the body of Christ is suffering with the kinds of pastors they have. Well, when I saw that was the case, I just said, something's got to break with this. We cannot do this. Because as I told you yesterday, in our talk yesterday, I said, the best, humanly speaking, the best opportunity your great-grandchildren have for hearing the gospel is Africa. And the reason is because there's going to be a billion of them. And the center of Christianity is going to move, just as it's moved from Western Europe to the United States, it's moving already from the United States to Africa. That's where it's going. It's just amazing how that's true. And you don't believe that, then go to practically every evangelical church in this city. And what kind of music are they playing? Pardon me? Rock and roll. Where's rock and roll come from? Elvis Presley. And where did Elvis... That's right. That's right. That's a good path to follow. And where did Elvis Presley get his stuff? New Orleans blues. Thank you very much. Which is African American. So don't tell me that we're not already seeing the shift of influence from Africa, from here to Africa. It's happening in the music. Are you following me? And the bishops of the Anglican churches that are conservative and still believe in something are almost all African or Asian. The Southern Baptists are even now bringing African missionaries to the United States. That's just amazing, isn't it? So the bottom line question is this: what do you want those African Christians to believe when they come back and evangelize your great-grandchildren? You want them to believe what they believe now? Because where they get their theology now is by watching television. And they watch Trinity Broadcast Network, as I was telling Karen this morning. Trinity Broadcast Network, all this crazy Benny Hinn and Joel Osteen, and you pray for them to get on TV because they're the best, okay, the most biblical. It's everywhere in the world. Everywhere in the world. And our stuff is nowhere in the world. So whose fault is it then that Africa is basically into health and wealth prosperity theology rather than the true gospel? Whose fault is it? We're not putting it on TV. We're not reaching out to them. We're not training their leaders. Other people are. And they're getting it from America. You follow this? Okay, well, it's time to change that. That's what that matriarch was saying to me that day. It's time to change this. And there's just no way we should do it any other way. And so what Third Millennium does to create biblical education for the world for free is we create a curriculum. And I want to just sort of show you. I'm going to run this without any sound. And this is a series, the first lesson in a series on the Apostles' Creed. And you just kind of watch, you know, out the corner of your eye, or when you get bored of looking at me, just kind of watch what goes on there. Because what we do at Third Mill is we're creating a seminary curriculum, and this is the equal to what your pastors have gotten, like Stu and like Steve, from a Reformed Theological Seminary. I know this because I taught at RTS for 25 years, okay? That's why I know what's taught there. And we are creating this curriculum so that it can be delivered to every person in the world. Now, to do that, you've got to create it so it can be delivered by paper only, because some places in the world only have paper. So, yeah, I got that. Like we're using South Sudan with paper and little books where you fill in the blanks, just like old-time correspondence courses back in the 1950s. You follow me? We're using South Sudan that way. The next level up technologically would be audio only, like for radio or MP3 players. You know that ministry is called Faith Comes by Hearing, that they have the Bible and that kind of stuff on audio with solar power. We're now being put onto their recording devices. Isn't that great? We had to do all these things to the audio to make it fit with the chapter headings and that stuff so people can scroll through it and that kind of thing with audio. It's really cool. And so now they're getting theological education through Faith Comes by Hearing, if you've heard of them before. It's very nice. Soon, by the way, Faith Comes by Hearing is going to have to change its name because we're now going to have solar-powered video devices, which is the next level up. Okay, next level up is video. Some hard form of video like a flash drive or a hard drive on a computer or a DVD. We just got back last year from Nigeria. We were invited by Campus Crusade to go to a meeting of church planters. You may not know this, but Campus Crusade is now planting churches. That was what we always criticized them for, wasn't it? They're parachurch. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, I remember talking with one guy from Ethiopia who was the head of all this stuff. And he said to me, he said, Bill Bright made a mistake 35 years ago. And I was watching for the lightning to flash. It didn't happen. Okay. There were about 8,000 students, by the way, here at this thing, university students in Nigeria. And so I said, what was that? He said, well, we had all these converts and all these campuses around the world, but we had no churches for them to go to. And so we've lost a lot of them. So we've started doing churches. And he said, our goal now is within the by 2050 to have, are we ready for this? 5 million church plants. 5 million. They never think small at Camps Crusade. Okay, so 5 million church plants. And this was the African center of this. You follow me? Where we were. We had been invited to come. And he said, but we made a mistake 5 years ago when we decided to do that. So really, he said, yeah, what was that mistake? He said, if you're going to have 5 million new churches, you've got to have 5 million pastors. Whoops. And he said, that's why you're here. So what we did was we brought about 4,000 thumb drives with third millennium materials on it, videos like what you're looking at here. Okay, these were all in English, but about 4,000 of them. And on one thumb drive, we were able to deliver a full year of seminary education on video, the manuscripts, books, and tests, and all kinds of activity sheets and things like that on one thumb drive for less than $25 a piece. That's a far cry from... Pardon me? Oh, no, no, no. I'm just talking about the thumb drive. Oh, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Yeah, are you kidding me? I'm just trying to give you a sense that once it's made, that's what the distribution cost is. Remember, the operating budget of a normal seminary is $15 million each and every year. Each and every year. Okay, I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. All right, so I went paper to audio only to thumb drives and DVDs, hard forms of video. The next level up technologically would be online. So we are, everything we have, you can go to the website today, you can stream it all, you can download it all, it's all there, it's for free. You can practice your Arabic if you want to, or you can practice your Spanish, or your Mandarin Chinese, or your English, or your Russian, okay? Because our five core languages are English, Russian, Spanish, Mandarin, and Arabic. Those are our five main languages in our office. If you were to come to our office in Orlando, if you come to Disney, come to see us. We'll give you the third mill world tour, okay? And if they come at lunchtime, you'll have all the smells of all those countries. It's really bizarre, okay? Because Chinese food for a Chinese doesn't smell like the Chinese restaurant. Let's just put it that way. By the way, those five languages are 42% of the earth. And then there are 20 ministries, 21 now, that are translating us into about 21 other languages, like Hindi, like Mongolian. We've been broadcast on national television in Mongolia for years now. Can you believe that? Mongolia. Okay? French. Swahili is now happening. So languages like those, okay? So the next level up then is online, just straight up download, whatever you want to do on our website. So take a look at it sometime, thirdmill.org. And then the next level up, or if you Google third millennium, even if you misspell millennium, it has two N's. If you misspell it, you'll still get us for the first hit because our hits are so high. And we don't pay for the space. It's because of the ratings. It's true ratings, not for pay. The next level up is mobile devices. We have apps for every mobile device known to humanity. And in fact, we are used on mobile devices all over the world. Professional educationists will tell you that the future of education, both lower and higher, is mobile devices. The so-called third screen. Your TV, your computer, your desktop, or your laptop, and then your third screen, which is your smartphone or your tablet, whatever you may use. You with me? That's where all education is going, is to that third screen. And we have apps for everything. Your iPhone, your Droid phone, your Windows phone, we got them all. You can go to the website, you can download them for free. You can look at them all and watch them all or listen to them all for free. In Cuba, Eyewitness, we now have 1,500 students in Cuba in the Third Mill program, pastors. And they got into this because a missionary from Memphis decided that the way to deliver Third Mill was to go to Memphis and get money to buy video tablets. So he buys little $50 video tablets, uses SD cards to load our stuff up onto these video tablets, and that's how they get their stuff. You with me on this? Is that cool or what? Okay. And in China, there are missionary agencies that buy or take, I should say, take donations of old iPhones solely for the purpose of loading Third Mill on them for pastors in China. It's really wonderful when you think about it. So paper, audio only, hard video, online video, mobile devices, and the highest level of technology for us is satellite television broadcast. The reason we make it like this, you see how it's not a talking head? There's nothing more boring than a professor, except a professor on video. Okay? Okay, let's just face it. Nobody wants to sit and watch a video of some old fat white man like me talking to them. Say, yeah, I got it. Okay, the most you would do is just listen to the audio of such a thing, right? I mean, they're boring in class. You know they're boring on TV. But the only thing worse than that is, the only thing worse than more boring than a professor is a professor on video, but the only thing is worse than that is a professor on video translated into another language. Okay, for which you just shoot them. You know, put me out of my misery, please. So the reason all, you can see we have, this is more or less based on sort of a History Channel format where you have spot interviews of experts and then the bulk, at least 85% of every hour, is graphic driven. Okay? And that's because if you could hear the audio, it's all, you can tell it's more or less culturally neutral also as much as possible. And so if you were hearing this in Arabic, it's in Arabic. It's just flat out Arabic. You can't even tell it's made in America. And Russian, the same kind of thing. The Russian team and the Arabic team and the Chinese team make sure that's true. So it's really very nice. Television broadcast is the highest level that we have, and it's the furthest reach that we have. Now, I'm going to tell you some numbers. These are deacon numbers, not preacher numbers. What's the difference? They're accurate. That's right. I mean, when Steve leaves church, he goes home thinking, we had like 300 people here today, didn't we? Okay, and the deacons say, no, it's more like 75. Because, you know, he's looking around, counting three or four times, that kind of thing. Okay, counting the snake that went across the gravel, that kind of thing. And you've always heard how missionaries speak evangelistically, right? Or, you know, that missionary stories are like fish stories, okay? And they are. I mean, it's hard not to. We did take a holy vow early on at Third Mill not ever to exaggerate what we're doing. And so actually what I'm about to tell you is not the truth. It's actually an underreporting. Because if I were to tell you what we think is actually true, you would not believe it. Because you're not going to believe what I tell you right now. Okay? These are verified numbers. Just last year, and we have been in existence now for 16 years, just last year, Third Mill was used in every nation in the world, and we were used by people intentionally as students. We were used by 6.4 million people. That's a good number. Now, in addition to that, when you take television and add to that, we don't call those users, we call those viewers. We call television people viewers. We sort of see that as a big net to get people into learning communities using our stuff. So we call them viewers, not users. And there's no way to count them except to take the estimates of the television companies that broadcast us, okay? By the way, we're going to be on DirecTV. Do you get DirecTV here? Okay, we're on DirecTV on the National Religious Broadcasters, I think this month, in April, starting in April. For an hour or 30 minutes every week, midday around 2 p.m., I think it is. So you might want to look at it in English. Yuck, that's kind of boring, but that's the way it is. Anyway, if you take the estimates, now these are their estimates. I don't believe their estimates, but let me just tell you what their estimates are. The television networks or satellite systems that broadcast us, the estimates are, if you add them all up, that last year, on average, one hour a week, over 65 million people watched Third Mill. Now, I don't believe that. So I think maybe 1/100th of that is true. What's that number? 65 million? 650,000? Okay, are you with me on this? I can go with 650,000. Do you know how long it takes one of our seminaries in this country to reach 600,000 people? 6 millennia. 6,000 years. So I can go with 1/100 of what they're saying. I could go with 1/1000 of what they're saying. That we're actually reaching 600,000 church leaders in English, Russian, Spanish, Mandarin, Arabic, Mongolian today, just this last year. It's just unbelievable. But see, here's the reality of it. That's the power of the media. And that's why, you know, you want to know why our culture has changed so rapidly on fundamental things like marriage? You know why, don't you? It's television. Television is what's changed attitudes. It's unbelievable the power that media has. And so what do we do with it as Reformed people? Nada. So no wonder. I cannot wait until the day that that we have our Hindi developed well enough that we can actually show this on TV in India. In fact, the head of TBN, the Trinity Broadcast Network in India, I had a meeting with him. He said, when you get it done, we'll show it. I said, for free? For free. Because we're not charging anybody. He's got to do it for free too. Okay? We're not going to pay him to do it. Now, you understand what that means? Trinity Broadcast Network, which is like the super-duper Pentecostal health and wealth stuff, is going to be broadcasting Reformed theology to India in Hindi. That's just phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, this is your kind of theology. You follow what I'm saying? We're making it mainstream. We're going to make this thing mainstream where the church is growing fast. We don't have to be in some obscure corner like we are in the United States. We can be the main show. All it takes is a little bit of creativity and a little bit of energy and a tiny, teeny, tiny little bit of money. Biblical education for the world. By the way, did you notice our teachers? This is not Richard Pratt's worldwide teaching ministry. Did you notice that? Like, we need another one of those. I mean, you can name off the guys that have these worldwide teaching ministries. It's like, for crying out loud, why in the world would you ever name a ministry after yourself and call it my worldwide international ministry? Okay? It's like, are you just insane? Now, remember what Janie, the matriarch, said to me when we first started this. She said, Richard, your face is not going to be on this. The face of Third Mill is those African students. It's those Chinese students. That's the face of Third Mill. It's the Indian students. It's the Latino students. It's not Richard Pratt. And that's, of course, I was on the early ones because I was the guinea pig, okay? But I'm not even on the videos anymore. Occasionally, they'll make me do a little cameo. If they need an interview shot and they can't find anybody else to do it, they'll make me do it, but with great resistance. And the reason for that is because this is to be the world's theological education, not Richard Pratt's theological education. And that's you know, I know myself. You don't want me educating the world, I can tell you that. Okay, I know me well enough to know that would not be a good thing. But I can help the world do it, and I'm happy to do that. So we said biblical education for the world. Now, I want to say this other thing to you. You notice also the denominations that are on here. Have you noticed that? You have Anglicans like J.I. Packer, and then a Wesleyan, and then a Baptist, and then a Presbyterian like Ligon Duncan, like the godfather of the whole PCA kind of person, okay? And, you know, so we got all these guys working together to create a global curriculum. Can you believe that one? That they stand in line at these seminaries to get onto these videos. It's unbelievable. Now, the one good thing you can be sure of is this. I had the final say of what goes on those videos. Okay, so if some Wesleyan says something crazy, we just chop it up. Okay? Of course, if a Presbyterian says something crazy, we chop it up. Okay? We describe our curriculum as Calvinism with a thick velvet glove. That's what it is. I mean, when you see Heidelberg show up on the Heidelberg Catechism show up on the screen, you know what it is. Most people don't have a clue what that is. And we don't get in their face and say, yeah, well, this is Calvinism, so too bad for you. Okay? We don't say things like that, okay? We introduce it to them very gently and very kindly, but they accept it for this reason. We are used more by non-Reformed groups than by Reformed groups in the world, by far. Of course, that's not saying much, is it? because there are only two of us out there. Okay? But the vast majority of the people that use us are Baptists and Charismatics and Pentecostals, the ones that you want using us, the ones we want to salt and pepper, Assembly of God. Do I want to turn the Assembly of God into the PCA? That's the last thing I want them to be, is like me and you. We know what that is. Say amen, somebody. We know that monster, okay? Okay, I'm happy to be a part of this monster, but nevertheless, I don't want to make them all that way, but we do want to salt and pepper them. We want to season them with the stuff that we know is true. I'm one of these weirdos that still believes in Reformed theology. That's, I know that's sort of strange these days, but I still believe in it. I still believe we actually have something to offer the whole world, and this is the way we're trying to do that. Okay, so we said biblical education for the world. Now, what's the last tagline? Do you remember? For free. Now, when I was talking to Michael, how was Michael's last name yesterday?
Alameda.
Alameda. And the words for free were very important to him, as they are to most people in the world. Because right now it costs $15,000 a year in tuition to go to one of our seminaries. And because it costs $15,000 a year to go to seminary in this country, and you have to have a four-year degree before that, who gets to go to seminary? Privileged people. You with me on this? I mean, in Miami, our seminary in Miami, our brand of seminary in Miami, or Fort Lauderdale, has like two Latinos in it. In Miami! Same thing in Margaritaville, Orlando. We have like three Latinos. It's absolutely phenomenal. You have to say no to them to keep that kind of ratio. You have to not seek them. You have to keep put up walls and keep them out. And the walls we put up are, you got to have 4 years of college and you got to have $15,000 a year in tuition. In fact, I got to speak to the deans of every evangelical seminary in the country a couple of years ago for about 3 hours. They asked me, why did I quit teaching in seminary? You had to be a fool to do that. And I said, yeah. And then second thing was, what in the world is third mill? That was the topic for 3 hours. And about halfway through that talk, I asked them this question. There's about 65 deans of our kinds of seminaries in this country were there. I said, guys, I know the answer to this question from my branch of the church, but what about the rest of you? This is Dallas Seminary, Talbot, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Chicago, Gordon-Conwell, Grace Theological Seminary, RTS, Covenant, Westminster, they're all there, okay? One big, happy family. And I said, what about this? Let me ask you this question. How many of you have a full program in Spanish? Now, there's 65 schools represented there, okay? And a lot of them in the Southwest and in Southeast, deep Southeast. How many of them do you think out of 65 have a program in Spanish? Ay nada. Not one. Not one. And I looked at them that day and I said something that I say a lot now. I think it was a Holy Spirit moment, so I use it a lot. I said, guys, I don't know how we figured out how to do this, but we evangelicals have figured out how to be in the coffin and nailing it shut at the same time. So that's what this is. Ignoring the fastest growing demographic in the United States that we found out from Michael, by 2050, by intermarriage, they're going to be about 40% of the country by 2050. And we're ignoring them? They're the fastest growing evangelical movement in the United States, and we're ignoring them? This is not just irresponsible, this is insane. I don't care whether you like them or not, okay? Whether you call them mojados or not. I don't care what you call them, what you think of them. You are going to have a Tito in your family. It's going to happen. Manolito is going to be there whether you like it or not. So get used to it. The only question is, do you want them to be Christian or not? And when we ignore their leaders, we are just being fools. But that's the situation we're facing right now. And then I asked them, I said, well, how many of you would like to have a program in Spanish? One, Grace Seminary in San Diego, raised his hand gingerly, because I'm really laying it on him pretty hard at this point. And he goes, I'd like to have one. I said, well, then why don't you? He said, well, because I have to have three or four professors who speak fluent Spanish, for one thing. Where are they? And then I have to have 30 to 50 students who can pay $15,000 a year in tuition. Where are they? I said, yeah, if you do it that way, you'll never have a program in Spanish. You'll never do it. Got to be a different way. And that's what Third Mill provides. We're not trying to replace human learning communities at all. What we're trying to do is facilitate them so that they can concentrate and spend their time on practical matters rather than the normal sort of philosophical and abstract things that professors love to talk about. So we provide the basic content of a seminary curriculum, and then they talk to the students about the implications of that curriculum for their lives, their personal lives, and their ministries. And that's what Third Mill's trying to do. But do you remember that third tagline, for free? People say, how can you do that? Well, you raised the $100 question, didn't you? And that is, this we can give it away for free, but we can't make it for free. Yeah. So, you know, basically, I'm the monkey on the chain that has the tin cup that goes around shaking all the time. Okay? By the time Third Mill, well, let me just put it this way. Third Mill has finished 75%, three-quarters of a two-year curriculum. That's our goal. It's a two-year Master's of Arts curriculum, like in a seminary, RTS Covenant Westminster, okay? The equal to that. We finished three-fourths of that, pardon me, 75%, right at 75%. We will finish the rest of this, and we will distribute it to 42% of the earth in their lands and their language. Are you with me on this? With our five core languages. We'll finish it, and we'll distribute it to 42% of the planet for millions of dollars less than it costs to run one of our seminaries for 1 year. That's how we can give it away. It's because this is pennies on the hundreds or thousand dollars. It's cheap. And the SROI, what we call the spiritual return on investment, is absolutely phenomenal. Steve, number two, would you please tell them, Mike had never heard of us, Third Mill. Could you tell him how he reacted to it yesterday? Don't exaggerate. I mean, just what was your sense of how he reacted to the idea? Very interesting. And you know Enrique, yes, remember him, who's been here at your church? He said Enrique will be very interested in this. Yeah. They won't have to pay for all that money. They won't be turned into a white boy either as he does it. Okay? And, you know, this is the reality. That story is repeated by the hundreds of thousands. And there's just absolutely no reason why a pastor in the world today should not have the kind of theological education that he needs to have. It's just, there's no reason for it at all. And so that's why Third Mill works so hard to make this happen. Okay, I'm done. You need to say something. Yes? Oh, yeah, she's the chairman of the board. Has been for 16 years. We would. Can I just say it that way? That's the problem. It's part of the problem, anyway. Yeah, we will partner with anybody. We would love it if somebody would step up and say, hey, we'll take care of the last quarter. That'd be just great. Then I could go to other languages. Yes? Oh, you're the man. Tell them about it. Yeah, when I first came there, I thought I recognized you. It is unbelievable, isn't it? Carriage Lane out in Peachtree City, south of Atlanta, was one of the early churches that came behind us in a big way. And they've been faithful to us for a decade now, over a decade. And yeah, it is unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. Because I told them this was true. I said, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And they believed me. That was some, I don't know why you did. But they believe me, okay? And now it's happening. It's just kind of mind-boggling. Yeah? Educational process? Good. I need to make that as clear as possible. Third Mill is not a school. We don't want to be a school. What we are is a curriculum provider for schools. Okay. Now we will help organize. We will help people trying to organize. We will. We go on the ground. It's happening in Cuba and Bolivia. It just happened 2 weeks ago in Kenya. That we will send people there to advise them on how to use us. That's the kind of thing we do. Kind of like. Yes, that can happen. That's exactly what the mic contact was all about yesterday. Yeah, when I saw that yesterday, his network online, I said, okay, this is it. Yeah. I said, this is it. I mean, because he said, did you notice how I perked up when he said we use technology? I said, what kind of technology? Okay? Because he doesn't even know this yet, because he hadn't even looked at our stuff. But when he looks at this and he sees the quality of this, and he hears the quality of the Spanish, it's going to blow his mind. Because he's going to figure, you know, this is another one of those gringo efforts to do Spanish, which is going to be all this Spanglish and all this other crazy, stupid stuff. Pardon me? We have very strict quality controls on translation for our five core languages and the others. In fact, they have to sign certain quality controls. And I'll just tell you what they are. You have to have at least four countries or four dialects represented. Okay? In this case, it's Latin American Spanish, but it's not Mexican. It's not Argentinian. It's certainly not Cubano. Okay? Okay, not Puerto Rican. But we have four countries that review it, and one of those four has to have an MDiv or higher from our tradition to form a translation team. Because that person has to check that thing out theologically. So the voices you hear in Spanish are people from, let's see, one of them is from Mexico City, high society Mexico City, or high society Yucatan Peninsula, highly educated people, so they don't sound like, you know, you don't hear any mande, or anything like that. Like we have, like the coordinator is Mexican, and she, when we have conversations, she always say, mande, you know what I'm talking about? That means basically, whatever you say, that's what it means basically. Or claro, you'll hear the Mexicanos say that all the time, claro, you'll get that stuff. And also it's really important because what's an acceptable word in one country is a cuss word in another country. So, okay, you have to really be careful. And so we have multiplicities of languages, nationalities that review all these. Yeah. Yes. I would like to see what I think is going to happen. I think it's inevitable. But I would like to see it happen faster because the longer we wait, the harder it's going to be for us. I would like to see people who are going to go into the ministry, in our tradition, trained up by the presbytery. And that they do this while they're in service. I mean full service. I don't mean making copies on Thursday night for the youth group. You follow me? That's what most internships are. You have to make the copies of the photocopier on Thursday afternoon for the Friday night youth meeting. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about real blood-sucking, hell on wheels, okay, ministry experience. That's what I want, because I want to see who can make it through. I want to see some real men come and lead the church. Some men and their wives who are ready to give their lives for this and not take some golden yellow brick road professional track, which is what we've turned it into. So if you were here, the first thing I would say to you is you've got to learn Spanish. You say, what? I say, yeah, that's what I said. You've got to learn Spanish. So now your job is to go live in the Latino community and learn Spanish for the next 3 months. That's it. You cannot minister in Arizona without Spanish. Period. Period. In fact, I think in our seminary in Florida, we ought to stop either Greek or Hebrew and make them take Spanish. It's insane not to. That's how committed I am to this. They need to be in emergency rooms. They need to be in hospices. I was telling the group last night, do you know we ordain people in our denomination who have never led a person to Christ? We ordain people who have never seen a person die. I can't think of anything dumber than that. So when I go to presbyteries and they say, how would you change things, Richard? I say, first thing is, old guys, you're not going to change. Forget it. Right, George? You and I are not going to change. Am I right? All right, right. Okay, we're stuck. You're stuck with us, whether you like it or not. Okay, but we can change the next generation of ministers. All you have to do is change the questions you ask them at presbytery when you examine them. Forget what's in 1 Samuel 23. A monkey can learn that. A monkey can learn what's in 1 Samuel 23. The first question should be, tell us the last time you shared Christ with a prostitute. And if they blink, I mean if they blink, you pull the trap door and they're gone. Okay? You keep asking those kinds of questions. When is the last person you saw die? Okay. You know, it's like Monty Python. What's your favorite color? Okay. And you do that to five or six guys, I'll tell you, number seven is going to say, I shared my faith with a prostitute just yesterday. Okay. And her name was Sue, and I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. And they're not going to blink at all. That's the kind of men we need running our church now. That's what we need. People who are unafraid, because it's going to take that kind of sacrifice to turn things around. And so it amazes me. I'll be theological for just a moment. It amazes me. You know, we believe God's in control of everything. We believe God predestines everything. We believe God loves us with an eternal love in Jesus. But we are the most timid denomination in the country. We are the most fearful denomination in the country, including our leaders. We are afraid. We are afraid of martyrdom when we know that in the history of the church has never advanced without people dying. Exactly. It's all right. We want you to sing well anyway. I'm done. Okay? Yes. The next 5 years is to finish the last quarter and to continue to help groups that are trying to translate us into other languages. And the shape of the next 5 years is 100% dependent upon me shaking this tin can louder and louder. Okay? And people can do things like support the Hindi translation. They can do that. Okay? They can specify those kinds of things. Because the NTW, the Presbyterian Mission over there, they are the ones, their team over there, that is Indians that work with them, are the ones translating it. So it's a very reliable translation. You should go on the website and look at the Hindi, see what you think of the translation. I'd like to hear what you say.
I was asking because there are other languages where there are more who are not trained reformedly, though they say they're
reformed. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, of course. We're the cheapest show in town, but it's still you have to pay something for the ticket. Yeah. And we are working hard to make that happen. Our goal is every land, every language. Let me put it this way. When Coca-Cola first started, their slogan was never more than a mile away. Do you remember that one?
No.
Okay. Well, it was one of their earliest slogans was never more than a mile away. They wanted a Coke within 1 mile of every human being. And they did it. They did it. So that in India today, and in Mexico today, and even in Canada today, okay, if you want something to drink, you have to choose not to drink a Coca-Cola. Okay? That's what we want Third Mill to be. Yeah, exactly.
And the bottles are all frosty looking because they've all rattled.
Yeah, been scraped.
So,
yeah.
And he goes, that's what we need to do. We need to be like Coca-Cola.
That's right. Never more than a mile away. See, that's our philosophy. We want them to have to choose Fanta instead of us. We want them to have to choose Joel Osteen instead of us. But right now, they don't have a choice. He's the only thing they've got. Peace. Take a break. I'm going to yell at you some more in a minute.